Media days this weekend. Training camp is just around the corner. There are a lot of topics to discuss for the Golden State Warriors, and who better than Connor Letourneau, former Golden State Warriors beat reporter, now an enterprise reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle. You just published an incredible piece that we're going to get into later in the show, but obviously we're going to stick to Warriors for the start of it, and there's some burning questions to answer, and we're going to get all of that covered next. This is Locked On Warriors.
You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thank you for making Locked On Warriors your first listen every day. We're free and available wherever you get podcasts. You can follow Connor Letourneau, sports enterprise reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle at con_cron, con_chron. You can follow me, Cyrus Sotzes, on Twitter at DogSurf Roadshow. I got to start the show first off. The last episode we recorded on Monday, it was almost exclusive Draymond Green coverage because last week some show was published. I think it's called Checking In. Where Draymond was talking about his injury. We learned there was nothing fake about it, but I think, even though nothing's confirmed, I think the interview took place back in early April, late March. So this isn't like something that's still ongoing right now. Connor, I don't know if you had a chance to see that. Like, did you see those clips of Draymond Green talking about his back injury from earlier in the season? Did that give you pause? Like, what were your thoughts about that?
I'll be honest. I like somehow missed that, and I became aware of it from your podcast the other day. To be completely transparent here, I have not been as dialed in with the Warriors the past few weeks because I have been so ingrained in this story that published today that required my full attention. And our beat writer, who you know was handling the day to day stuff with the Warriors, so I'm back. I'm back locked in though. Series out there in the world, and I'm kind of focusing on the start of training camp and things, so I'm getting caught up. So it almost feels like I went on vacation, even though I didn't. I just was like not plugged in on anything other than what I was working on. You know how it is.
I do. But I mean, you were, and we're going to cover that in a little bit here. An incredible investigative piece. It wouldn't surprise me if you got some awards for that. But you also picked a perfect time to miss a few weeks. I mean, this is like the absolute deadest time of year. It's a struggle to come up with interesting news stories. But yeah, Draymond Green, let's hope he's fine this year. But on Monday's show again, that was in reference, I think, to late March. Connor, you wrote a piece for the San Francisco Chronicle right before your reporting style story. And we'll cover that in just a moment. But you asked a bunch of questions that you answered, and they're great questions. I think these are questions a lot of Warriors fans are pondering. And in fact, it's actually perfect for the show if we just revisit them. And I'll ask you this first. And again, you wrote this whole column for the San Francisco Chronicle. If folks want to read it, I subscribe. It's where information starts, folks. It's newspapers. And it's one of the many things that blows my mind repeatedly every semester I teach in college, because most students and most people don't realize that's where information comes from, are individuals like you, Connor, that ones who you're actually on the ground gathering information, putting it together. You're having second and third individuals peer edit your work, helping you out. And that's the information that we form as reality comes from folks like you, and it's phenomenal. And most people do not give you the credit that I think you deserve. But first off, the Warriors, did they get better this offseason? Your thoughts?
As I outlined in that story, it's kind of a nuanced question, right? Because you look at their offseason at a glance and you would think they got worse. They regressed, right? I mean, they lost Gary Payton II, an all defensive team caliber perimeter stopper. They lost Otto Porter Jr., who I would say is an essential role player in this league and definitely on last year's team for the Warriors. And then they basically replaced them with Dante DiVincenzo, who Sacramento just straight up didn't even want. And then Jamichael Green, who is a stretch four who couldn't shoot a three last year. And so you kind of think, okay, that's definitely some regression right there. But you got to look at the macro lens, right? You got to look at the bigger picture. And first of all, I think there is something to be said for cutting down on the luxury tax. That's going to put them in a better position to thrive long term. Okay. And then you also got to take into account that there is a little bit of addition by subtraction here. When you're letting go of guys like Damian Lee and Juan Toscano-Anderson, you're creating more opportunity for your young guys, guys like Jonathan Kuminga and Moses Moody. And I am personally incredibly intrigued and excited to see what those guys do as regular valued rotation players. You know, guys who are playing 20 plus minutes a night, who are given a longer leash to play through their mistakes. And you also to take account when you're looking at the team as a whole in their offseason, just the natural improvement that individual guys are going to have on their roster. Jordan Poole is going to be better. You know, I think Klay Thompson is going to be healthier. Yeah. Andrew Wiggins is going to be emboldened by his strong postseason. I think he's going to continue to build off that. He's still in his prime. You know, you're going to have James Wiseman coming back from injury. So I think when you look at the big picture and put everything together, I think they're a better team this season than they were last season.
I do. I'm totally with you. The losses of Gary Payton II and Otto Porter Jr. undoubtedly is going to be difficult to replace. I mean, those are two such vitally important contributors to the team. But it's not just that Dante DiVincenzo, who you're right, it is weird that the Kings just let him go. But at the same time, if there's any team that I'm not going to read in too much in terms of personnel decisions, it's the Kings. And everyone I've talked to loves him. I've gotten like almost universal praise, and everyone who covers other teams is showing envy that the Warriors got DiVincenzo. And then Jermichael Green, you're right. He had a rough shooting season last year, but he, in his first press conference, said he was dealing with some sort of wrist or hand injury the entire year. He was also on a team that had no spacing because it was one of the worst shooting teams in the league last year, were the Denver Nuggets. So, I don't mind that. And then you look at Wiseman basically supplanting Bielitsa. That's what that swap is. So I'm with you, man. And Kuminga and Moody are obviously going to have bigger roles. I'm really excited about that personally. All right. So question two that you asked in your article, and now we're covering this verbally. James Wiseman, all reports are indicating that the team is happy with his growth, with his training, with his progress. He seems healthy. Your colleague CJ Holmes has written content saying that the team is excited about what's to come. What have you heard, and what are your thoughts about how Wiseman's going to look here in year three?
I'm really curious and intrigued to see how he looks. I mean, we got a little bit of a sneak peek in summer league. I think he's kind of where you would expect him to be as someone who hasn't played in almost, you know, how long has it been now? It's a year and a half or something, maybe even longer. He's only played 39 games in two seasons. And then keep in mind, he only played 69 minutes in college. I mean, he's a physical freak. You know, he's shown that he can run the floor, that he can rebound, that he can block shots and things like that. I'm just really curious to see how he, you know, fits into the team framework, you know, because I think that you saw his rookie year when he did play. He was not an ideal fit in certain ways. He's not a passing big. The Warriors tend to like a center who can be kind of an offensive fulcrum, a guy who can kick out to open shooters, who can read a defense. That's not his strength. I worry about his basketball IQ. I worry about his feel for the game. But, you know, I think he's in an ideal situation this year, at least, in the sense that he's not going to have any pressure on him. You know, Kevon Looney proved that he is a more than capable starting center for a championship caliber team. Kevon Looney can do the heavy lifting at that position. If you just have, you know, James Wiseman coming in, starting out for like 10 to 15 minutes a night as a backup big, I think he can more than handle that and then slowly ease in. And then hopefully by the end of the regular season, he's closer to that 20 minutes a night mark and is a helpful player. You know, a lot of people looked at his rookie season numbers and felt good about them. Mm-hmm. I personally didn't, because his plus minus was horrible. He did not prove that he could help him win. So I'm not going to be so much judging him off of like how many points per game he's averaging and things like that. I'm going to be judging him off of, are those winning lineups when he's in there? Can he be a helpful complementary piece?
Right.
That's how I'm going to be judging.
And by the way, you mentioned 10 to 15 minutes. Like, it might be more than that. He might be playing 20, 25 minutes a game. It's been reported that, you know, he's not going to be starting, obviously. Kevon Looney's a starter, which in hindsight is a great thing. I think James Wiseman coming off the bench as your backup center, that's awesome. That's, I think, where he absolutely should be, given his limited experience. There's a lot more burning questions we're going to tackle. And obviously, I want to talk about your story, an incredible investigative piece that you wrote for the San Francisco Chronicle, your employer, pertaining to sex trafficking and an individual whose potential in professional basketball still is very bright and who was mired in this really horrible, tragic situation. So we're going to cover that and so much more. First, I got to give some love to a longtime sponsor of this program, Bet Online. We even have a visual graphic for the YouTube viewers. Look at that beautiful overlay, Connor, right below us. Bet Online. You can find all the latest news, game developments, all your betting needs, sports information. They're also your continued source for all your sporting wagering information, including live betting, esports, and scores. It's the fastest and easiest way to check in on all your favorite sports and events, including Major League Baseball. By the way, Aaron Judge, man, look, you and I were talking before we started recording about how, as we're getting older in life, sports just doesn't, it loses its meaning a little bit, right? Like, basketball is one sport that I really have not lost my love and passion for. Baseball, man, I used to be so into it, and I could care less right now. But Aaron Judge is kind of bringing me back into it a little bit, man. Like, what are your thoughts on this thing? He has 60 home runs.
Aaron Judge is actually on my fantasy team, my fantasy baseball team. I got a fantasy baseball team for the first time in a very long time this season. And Aaron Judge has, like, single-handedly kept me interested. And I was leading my league most of the season because of him.
Nice.
No, what he's done is absolutely incredible. I actually am planning a story on Aaron Judge soon.
Oh.
I won't reveal the details, but I'm going to add my own little angle to get into his season, local angle to get into his season. But that, you know, that's been one of the fun things about this role is I love writing about the Warriors, but I also love, like, if something's relevant, digging into that as well in other sports arenas.
Absolutely, man. And thank you to Aaron Judge for bringing my interest back into baseball. He's pursuing the Triple Crown, and you could bet on him, on the Yankees, whatever you want. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends in action. Bet Online, it's where the game starts.
You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thank you for making Locked On Warriors your first listen. Now go and make the NBA Top 50 on Locked On NBA, your second listen. Which NBA player moves the betting line the most this season? Locked On and the Bet Online odds makers present the NBA Top 50 Most Valuable Players. Find it on Locked On NBA, wherever you get your podcast, and on YouTube. You can find Connor Letourneau on Twitter at @con_cron, CON_CHRON. Let's get into this piece you wrote. And I think we're going to make this a two-parter. So part two will be available tomorrow, folks. We're recording this on Wednesday, September 21st, just because there's a lot more Warriors to cover. But at the same time, Connor, you wrote this incredible piece. I was captivated beginning to end. I feel like this story emblemizes investigative journalism, especially pertaining to a profile piece. So how did you first discover the story of this local athlete? How did you come about this? And just describe the story in your words, please.
Yeah. So for those who haven't read it, it's about a woman named Akira Da Costa, who at one point was the number one ranked women's basketball recruit in the 2018 high school class. She had offers from every college blue blood. She was a McDonald's All-American, you name it. She played for Team USA for her age level for several years, won gold with Team USA, was MVP of a 3-on-3 tournament in China her senior year. I mean, you name it, she achieved it in high school. She went to Baylor, you know, one of the top women's basketball programs, ended up kind of bouncing around a bit, to several different colleges, was out of basketball for a while. No one really understood or knew what had happened to her. At one point in, like, spring 2020, she had a tweet that she later deleted where she said that she had attempted suicide. And everyone's like, wait, what's going on with this woman? She hadn't played competitive basketball in years. No one knew what was really happening with her. I had a friend of mine, actually, Kevin Dana, who is a friend of the show, comes on
every Wednesday starting next week.
Kevin Dana, you know, is a utility man when it comes to play by play. And he does all different types of play by play in the Bay Area. And he actually was a play by play man for the championship game, I think last month, for this Bay Area women's semi pro basketball league. And he had a tweet about Akira Da Costa being MVP of the league. And I had a friend of mine from college who follows women's basketball and had known a little bit about her story. And he sent me a screenshot of the tweet. And he was like, dude, there might be a story here. You know, this woman was once a top recruit. She attempted suicide a couple years ago. And so I tracked down her number just thinking I'm going to do a story on a top recruit who's getting her career back on track, who's maybe overcome some depression and things like that. Go out to Stockton, go to meet her at her old high school, sit down with her, talk to her for like an hour. And about an hour in, she mentions that she was kidnapped. And I'm like, wait, what? What are you talking about? And she opens up to me and she tells me what had happened. She had been, you know, had fallen into a kind of a bad crowd after her basketball career fell apart and was dealing with some depression. And a lot of things had happened in her personal life. Her longtime girlfriend had been murdered in a drive-by shooting in Fresno. She found out that she was adopted. Her parents were not, in fact, her biological parents. So all this is kind of happening at the same time. So her life becomes completely untethered. She starts becoming kind of a transient, starts kind of just hopping from couch to couch, going to parties, hanging out with the wrong type of people. At one of those parties, meets a woman who she thought was a friend. Comes, long story short, I don't want to give too much away because I want people to read it, but
right, yeah.
She ends up being sold out to a sex trafficker. And was forced to walk the streets of Sacramento and solicit sex, and just went through absolute hell. Was living in a captor's house for 3 months, and then was able to escape in May with the help of her parents. And then in June, she picked up a basketball for the first time in 7 months. Immediately, you know, kind of regained her abilities. You know, kind of fell back into sync with what she used to be able to do, and was MVP of that Symbi Pro League, which had a bunch of top college players in it, overseas players, parlayed that into a contract in Sweden, Sweden's top level. And she's kind of starting to knock on the door a little bit for the WNBA. You know, if she dominates Sweden, which a lot of people believe she can, she might have a chance to get a training camp invite or something, which keep in mind, she escaped in May.
There's a lot of things to the story that are incredibly fascinating. To put it in perspective, first of all, she's only 22 now. Yeah. When I read this story, I'm thinking, like, given everything this individual went through, like, she's probably 30, 35 years old. She's only 22. One of the things that really disappointed me in reading this piece, and it's a fantastic piece, it's a huge reason why I subscribe to the San Francisco Chronicle, is who's the Baylor coach that totally just let her down? Like, that's a part of it that really bummed me out, because you mentioned how she bounced from she went to Baylor, then I think she went to a small school in Southern California. But the Baylor, did she go into that at all about how her coach at Baylor just basically was just absent, not there for, was not encouraging, was not supportive? Was that not a big piece that you, or part
I mean,
of the story?
Well, the thing about this piece was there was so much to it that I couldn't like dig too deep in certain aspects of her story, and you know, preceding her captivity in Sacramento, I kind of had to kind of go through it pretty quickly, just because I know anyone who's reading it wants to get to the meat of the story, which is her captivity, right?
Yes. So,
but yeah, she, I mean, as I wrote in the story, she did say that you actually had to schedule one-on-one meetings with the head coach.
That, thank you. That was the part that really turned me off, is that she wasn't available.
She said that you had to schedule one-on-one meetings, and she was kind of like a larger-than-life figure, and she didn't feel any sort of, you know, rapport with her.
Dude, F that, man. I
can't. And I mean, keep in mind that Kim Mulkey's been in the news lately because, as far as I know, she has not come out and said anything about Brittany Griner, even though Brittany Griner was her former player at Baylor. So,
yeah. So it's just reflective of who she is as a person. I cannot
say. I don't know her. I'm not going to make a judgment. Yeah. I'm just going.
I will.
I just reported what Akira's experience
was. Right, right. But I'll say it, man. If you're in a position like that, where you're the head coach of a college team, these are very young adults. I mean, human beings do not grow into fully formed adults until they're like in their mid late 20s. Studies have shown this. And I mean, most of these kids that are playing for like 18, 19, 20, you got to make yourself available. I mean, that part of the story really just pissed me off, because I feel like if she had a good coach at Baylor back then, her life would not have spiraled into where it went. Like, sometimes people need help, man. And if you're an educator, in that case, as a college coach, you're an educator. You're in a position of where you need to have some moral fortitude and be there for your players and your students, man. That just really bummed me out.
I talked to a lot of people in reporting this story who basically said that she would have benefited from going to a smaller school out of high school. And I think that's true with a lot of, you know, 18, 19 year old kids. Especially if you're a top recruit, you want to go to the big name school. You know, if you're recruited by a UConn or a Baylor or something as a women's basketball player, obviously you got to consider that, right?
Yeah.
But sometimes that's not what's actually best for the student athlete. You know, a lot of people benefit more from a smaller environment, a more hands-on environment. And as I wrote in the story, people who are close to her were concerned about her going to Baylor, even though on its face, it made sense. I mean, it's a top program. She was the headliner of the number one recruiting class in the nation. But a lot of people were like, I'm not sure that's the right move for you. I didn't include it in the story, but her high school coach told me that Baylor was the only school that recruited her that never once reached out to him.
But she picked them because it was a big program.
She liked, you know, the idea of like this big recruiting class, you know, understandably, like a lot of people would, but you know, her high school coach told me, he's like, I didn't feel good about that because they didn't reach out to me once, which told me like a lack of investment on their end.
Agreed.
But
that's a tragedy, you know, man.
She ended up at Loyola Marymount, where she actually had a much more positive experience, but because of everything she was going through in her personal life, couldn't stick it out.
Yeah, and again, there's just so many caveats to this piece. I mean, you're right. I think, was it at Loyola Marymount where she learned her partner was just murdered, randomly, man. And then I there's so many assets, facets to the story that are just beyond fascinating. I still can't believe that this was happening pretty much in her backyard. Sacramento. Like, there's areas of Sacramento where just prostitutes walk around in the streets. There's homes in Sacramento where women are enslaved. It's crazy, man. Like,
the thing is,
does this surprise you at all hearing this?
This stuff happens everywhere. I mean, this is a much more rampant issue than a lot of people realize. And that was, when I was writing this story, that was one thing I wanted to make very clear, is that as crazy as this story is, it happens a lot more often than people realize. There are 24.9 million people being trafficked in the world at any given point. And there are thousands and thousands of people being trafficked in the US at any given time. And one of the most surprising stats I found in my research for this story was that a nonprofit organization in Sacramento did a study recently, really in-depth study, where they actually were able to find that at least 13,000 people have been human trafficked in Sacramento, just Sacramento County, between like 2015 and 2020. And of those people, 94% are women, 50% are Black. Sacramento County only has 11% Black population. 50% of those victims are Black. A lot of them kind of fit the profile of Akira, you know, young Black women who were in an emotionally vulnerable state, who were taken advantage of. I talked to a sex trafficking expert and I detailed in depth Akira's story to her. And she told me straight up, that's textbook. That happens all the time. And I'm thinking, we're obviously thinking this is a crazy story, right?
Yeah.
She heard that as a sex trafficking expert and was like, that happens all the time.
That's crazy. And a part of me wonders if Sacramento is, and again, you're right, it probably is everywhere, but Sacramento being the I-5 and the I-80 converge there, they have an
apparently airport. There's like a name for it. I-5 is a big sex trafficking, you know, hub. As I wrote in the story, her captor, according to DaCosta, would actually, you know, take her and several other women who are living in the house and take them from Sacramento up to Portland, up to Seattle, just go up that I-5 corridor, wherever, you know, he felt like they could make the most money on a given weekend or something.
Oh my God. That's crazy. Well, again, if subscribe and kudos, mad kudos, to Akira DaCosta for opening up. I mean, the only way these problems can be solved is if awareness is raised.
And I don't think it can be understated how like courageous she is.
Yeah.
This is someone who is several months removed from this experience. We're not talking about something that happened a decade ago. We're not talking about something that happened years ago. We're talking about a couple months ago.
That's crazy, okay? Man.
And we're talking about an ongoing police investigation, you know, and she still wanted to come out. And I told her, like, when we had our conversations, I said, are you comfortable with this? You understand what this means, right? Like, you're going to be asked about this. Is it going to be something that follows you probably the rest of your life, the rest of your career? And she was like, I need to do this. And I was able to fact check a lot of the key information that she was providing me. Everything added up. We would not have run with this story if we weren't able to, you know, we're not just going to take someone's account. We were able to fact check key parts of the story. Also, her parents corroborated everything. Other people in her life corroborated the story detail for detail, you know, in terms of the important details. So, definitely was one of the craziest reporting. I'll just say the craziest reporting experience of my professional career for sure.
Absolutely, man.
And you know why I got into this. I mean, I don't shy away from stories like these, and
I'm proud of you for doing this, man. I'm obviously proud of Akira for speaking out, which took courage as well. And you know, I teach my journalism students that one of the founding principles and purposes of journalism is to give a voice to the voiceless. And Akira is a perfect example of that. Also, in the NBA, another story, Robert Sarver, the owner of the Suns, the news just broke that he's going to sell the team. Thank goodness. But the voiceless in that story were all the employees and ex-employees who had to work for this man. I mean, if Baxter Holmes and other journalists are not exposing, you know, this tyrannical actions of this monster, and I'm sorry for the hyperbole here, but I think it's warranted. He's a horrible human being. You know, the exposure of this, the information that comes out from this is vitally important. So kudos, man. Great job with that story. And again, subscribe to the San Francisco Chronicle to read a fantastic piece by Connor Letourneau covering Akira DaCosta. And good luck, Akira, in Sweden, where she's going to be starting her professional basketball career, resuming it. Certainly on a bigger scale, with dreams of maybe playing in the WNBA. Part two is coming up next. For folks who are watching this now, part two will be on Thursday. More with Connor Letourneau. We're going to dive back into the Warriors, answering some questions about top 100 rankings. Those are weird. And yet there's more questions in your column that you wrote for the Chronicle in terms of sort of a mailbag segment where you ask yourself questions, which was awesome. So that's coming up next.